Have you ever had someone refer to something going on in the community who asked you, what's going on there? What's the story with all that? The right answer lies with the people directly involved in it, the people who know. Why not hear their story? So welcome to What's the Story, Pekin? I'm Gary Gillis, your host, and I hope you enjoy this Pekin podcast. One of the things that the Pekin Bicentennial Committee is attempting to do is to motivate the community to share their story. We're learning a lot about the Pekin story in this 200th year of Pekin, but we're trying to have people talk about their family story and research the past. Typically, you would talk to a parent or grandparent to recall things that they remember, but there are other resources to consider, and we're blessed in this community to have one as part of the Tazewell Genealogical Society. I thought it'd be good, because of what we're attempting to do, to invite someone who is definitely in the know and the one resource I immediately thought of when I wanted to schedule this podcast. And Susan Reinierson is my guest here today. And we're going to talk a little bit about the resources that are available in researching your family's past and other things you may want to know about Pekin. So, Susan, welcome.
Thank you.
So someone comes and decides they're looking up their family history, and they've talked to somebody in the family, but now they want to do a deeper dive and find out a little bit more, maybe find out the roots of how their family came to this country, let alone to the community, and they would obviously then go where and ask what.
And we are the place to come to and ask those questions.
Sure.
We have a plethora of information. We probably have well over 10,000 books, well over 10,000 images. We have an archive full of diaries and journals and birthday books, just anything you can think of, we've got it. And more is coming in every day. But I would say, in spite of all the records, the biggest help we can provide is someone who is experienced and has done this before. We can direct you. If they were naturalized in Tazewell County, we've indexed those records.
Okay.
And so we can find your ancestors' naturalization records. If they lived here, we can find them in the census records. And people will say, well, isn't that online? Well, yes and no. And what we find is, so for example, I was looking into Javi van der Velde the other day. He can't be found in an online index, but when we indexed locally 50 years ago, we have him in our index.
Okay.
And it's about, one, being able to read the handwriting, and two, just simply knowing the names.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that the names have changed over the years? You know, the common, the historic or old traditional family spelling obviously sometimes gets what they call Americanized or shortened. You find that a lot?
Yes. So van der Velde became Velde.
Sure.
That's okay. An easy example.
There's some trivia to know.
Reinierson used to have a lot more letters in it than it does today. It was Dutch, and you know, they like to throw the whole alphabet in. And so many of our people that settled in Pekin in the mid-1800s were from an area known as Friesland, which tends to border what people commonly think of as Holland. Really strange spellings come out of that area of the world. So it's not likely if you don't have any experience.
Sure.
And the names can change drastically.
Would you have an index of, I'm thinking of my grandmother, my mother's side, came from what was Prussia in the early 20th century. But eventually all these communities were Stalinized when Stalin came into power, and their names were changed. So it was trying to find it on a map, and you'd have to really go back and find that. So is there, you have resources to do that, to try to
find
that?
We do. One of the resources we have, and it's one of the only, we have the most complete set, I'm told, anywhere in the U.S.,
really?
Is our Ortsippenbuchers. And the Ortsippenbuchers cover most of Ostfriesland. There's one or two that just haven't been compiled yet. And if you can find your name in there, you can get back probably to 1500 in what is today known as Germany.
Okay.
Of course, when my ancestors came over from that area of Europe, it wasn't yet unified Germany. So that's something else that you have. You have to know a little bit about European history if you want to get back. But yeah, it's we have been able to unravel some real mysteries, so it's doable.
Right. Well, I would think too. Here we are recording this at the Pekin Library, and there's a lot of resources in terms of general background. If you knew where your family member was from, then you could come in here and do at least a little bit of a broader background and then bring that to the Genealogical Society and have you folks help them look a little bit deeper.
Yeah, so like in my case, all 16 of my great-great-grandparents came to live in Illinois, but they all took a different path.
Sure.
So some of them were on the East Coast in the 1600s and gradually moved west. Others came directly to Illinois from Europe. And a lot of the German immigrants that Ty Smith brought over to work at the Wagon Works, they came pretty much through the Port of New Orleans. In fact, I don't know if I have any ancestors that came through New York.
Really?
I had them come through Baltimore, Philadelphia, New Orleans, and sometimes Canada. They would come in through Canada and down. So there were a lot of different paths. Not all, but I will say a lot of those ships' passengers lists are online now. And again, the trick is finding them in the list. Because even if they've been indexed, if they were indexed by AI or by someone born in the 20s, you know, younger than I am and doesn't have a lot of experience, they just don't get the names right.
Sure.
Now, a common fallacy is that things change at Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. The ship's passengers lists were actually written while they were still in Europe.
Okay.
So if a name changed later, it probably didn't have anything to do with immigration.
Okay.
Or not impossible, but unlikely.
In working with people and assisting others and doing research on your own, I guess as part of a understanding of our historic past in this bicentennial year, what would you, in terms of nationalities or most represented nationalities or ethnic backgrounds, would you claim here in Pekin?
In Pekin. Overwhelmingly German.
German, yeah.
Overwhelmingly.
Italian?
More, I think, 20th century immigrants, Italian and Irish. Again, some pre-1900, but mostly post-1900.
Okay.
And really, there's a little bit of everything. You know, there were people here from Slavic nations, and of course, a lot from the UK. But Pekin, because of Ty Smith, more than anything else, definitely German.
Okay.
Most of my ancestors that came directly to Illinois were either from Baden, Württemberg, Thuringen, or what we refer to as Ostfriesland, which is more Hanover.
Okay. So how did you find out all of this? I mean, if we're asking people to find out their family story, I mean, you know all the volumes, the sets of the family story. I mean, is it a passion, or is it something that you were first told and then you went and did greater research into it?
So when I was very young, one of my parents received a letter in the mail, and there was a gentleman out in New York who had retired and was compiling this Reinerson genealogy. And the Reinersons and Paulsons, being Dutch, were here in the 1600s. So quite an undertaking. And when I sat down to answer what very simple questions, because I started out going, I know my grandmother. I was with her every day when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sit down to answer the questions, and it's like, okay, I don't know anything. And so that had to change. And that was 1982, I think. And I'm still doing this 40-some years later.
And still learning and discovering things all the time.
You do. Additional resources will come to light as people share and more comes online. Although we do warn people that probably 1% of what's available is online.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started out, of course, no PCs, no internet. Which was actually good, because I now have all these fabulous letters from my cousins and describing all these stories that their grandparents told them. So I know that my great-great-grandfather was born up on the Wash, and that is a famous place in Europe, in England. our King John's men drowned crossing the Wash. So you get into all of those kind of stories that you wouldn't otherwise, if I hadn't been interviewing my grandmother's cousins or my grandfather's cousins, you just don't learn that stuff.
Now, do you have people call from all over the country, somehow trace their lineage in some ways through Pekin or back to Pekin?
Yes, we have members that live all over the country. In fact, we have three out of the country. And we get contacts all the time. We have people come in, you know, you open the door and somebody from Oklahoma is on their way back from the time trials and they want to know about this family that lived here. And actually, the other couple months ago, I walked in and there's a lady there from, I think, Utah, another lady from Ohio, and they're with a fellow from Ireland.
Really?
And so they had gotten together, met at O'Hare, drove down, and they came here to do research.
Wow.
So it's like you just really never, ever know.
Sure.
We just get people from all over, you know, New Mexico, Florida, California, Georgia, I mean, just everywhere.
Right.
We draw a lot of people to Pekin, believe it or
not.
Yeah.
I think that's
we're well known everywhere except Pekin.
Well, you know, I mean, I think with time, people's fascination with their past, or curiosity at least, it leads them to want to find some kind of resource. And as you mentioned, the internet, of course, has been kind of their go-to place. But we all know you can't trust everything on the internet, and perhaps they run into a dead end, and you know, need some place where they can get help and assistance, and someone knows how to go through the steps and methodology to find out.
And we're really a regional research facility because we have a lot of material from outside of Illinois. Mm-hmm. We have all of Illinois covered, but we have, and if you think about the migratory routes, you know, we're heavy with Ohio and Pennsylvania and Virginia,
of course.
We have a lot of materials from those areas, county histories and whatnot that describe families. And we have Kansas, because a lot of families went from here to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to have less on California and Wyoming, but we do have something from every state.
Sure. Now, in working with people, or perhaps even yourself in doing some research, I wonder if there's been some people who obviously in discovering their family history have that kind of wow moment. That's one thing we'd let you do, research in your family past. You may uncover something that in no way was ever shared, maybe something that family members didn't want to share, but then all of a sudden they discover it. Have you had moments like that?
Oh, yeah, I've had those moments. It's the stories that get handed down is kind of, you know, from my perspective, I think, okay, why did you tell me this, but you didn't tell me that? So I'm standing in a cemetery in Columbus, Ohio, and I find my great-great-grandfather, and carved in stone, the fact that he served in the Civil War and the Mexican War. And I'm like, okay, you told me Eddie Rickenbacker was our second cousin, but you didn't tell me Grandpa served in the war? I mean, come on, that's a way bigger deal to me.
Sure.
But, you know, Eddie Rickenbacker was something that stuck in the minds of the following generations and just not, you know, people in those days, I think they did their duty and they didn't really feel like it was a big deal.
Right.
That now we think, wow, that guy, you know, born and raised in Germany, he was only here a few years. He went right off to the Mexican War with his friend John Rickenbacker and then comes back. John marries his sister, which is how we're related. And then John turns around, which I really couldn't believe, and served in the Civil War. And by this time, he's well in his 50s. And I think, well, he was just at Columbus Barracks or something, you know, guarding prisoners. He was at Vicksburg. And it's like,
wow.
And was injured and discharged. But it's like, you think, why didn't you tell me this stuff, Grandpa?
So I have to ask, which side was he on?
Oh, Union.
Union. I thought you'd say that.
Because he was German. He was from Luttenbach, Germany.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yes. Have there been any, in additional research, any Pekinites of the past that you uncovered, or a story? Because I know we've been at some bicentennial committee meetings, and you're a very important part on the committee we both serve on. But you sometimes have shared that in your research there's been some name that is just, you know, someone who's had made an impact or made a difference, but their story is really not that well known, or their name is not well known.
A lot of our early movers and shakers kept on moving. So in time, that was, their stories were lost. And the Chapman history, which we depend on so much, a centennial history, often contains errors and omissions. So sometimes when you're just fleshing out those stories, and then of course, you know, more recently we've had a lot of our county clerk has digitized a lot of the county records, which are available now online. Now, the downfall is if you want to read the 1830 County Commissioner's Report, you better be able to read that old scrawl. Yeah, so I will feature things like that in our newsletter, and then I'll run across this. Spencer Field, who's that? So as I'm researching who's that, there is a story in the Chapman about the first steamboat to come up the river, and that old Jacob Tharp heard all that noise, thought it was Gabriel blowing his horn, and the end was near. I start doing research on Fielding, or Spencer Fields, and I find out he's probably the one that was piloting that boat.
Oh, really? Wow.
So he lived here in the 1830s, 1840s. Sometime in the 1840s, he moved to New Orleans. But when he was here, oh my gosh, he had his hands in everything. He was a trustee, an election judge. He platted Circleville, among other, with, along with a couple of other people. And we just found out he was one of the principals in the first bank that was ever located in Pekin.
Wow. Yeah.
So yeah, you just get all of these. So then I have something to write about in our monthly newsletter.
Well, you know, it's kind of like those interesting discoveries. Wagon Cellar, you know, the road south of town. I always thought it was named after someone or probably a business that sold wagons. No, there was a family named Wagon Cellar. So, you know, those are the kind of little things that you learn. And I know we plan to, as part of these podcasts, uncover kind of what's in a name of some of those. So, Susan, if someone was wanting to get more information, tell us where the office is. Tell us a number they can call or a person they can contact.
So our facility is at 719th North 11th Street. If you know where Arnett's used to be or Garfield School, that's where our building is located. We are open 6 days a week. You can visit our website, which is tcghs.org. You can stop by. The phone number is 477-3044. If daytime is a problem, there's somebody there Tuesday evenings, Wednesday afternoons, and Sunday afternoons. And generally, if I'm there, you can stop anytime. It's just that's hit and miss. But
and there are programs you've had as well in the past.
We have a monthly speaker. It's on the second Tuesday at 7 p.m.
Okay.
So in April, it will be Jeff Pulfer from the German American Society, who has been instrumental in launching the German Fest that's going to be taking place in April out at Avani's Event Center. So I think that'll be a good program. People don't realize to what extent this area was German. So it's, we did, actually we did a program with Emden, Germany back around Thanksgiving. And that a lot of the slides that I prepared is like, okay, can you tell that these were done in the United States and not in Germany, because I've got slides of our German language newspaper, our German language church records, a lot of the ads, even for Schipper and Block and Leise Beer and all of the very common, but they're all in German because they're in a German. It's it was the most commonly, it was as common in English as English, if not more common.
So I think your resources will change or improve besides things being digitized. I saw a documentary recently that they took old photos that were kind of grainy or kind of shadowed or whatever, and they can just clear that as if it was a photo taken with your iPhone just yesterday. So we'll be seeing some fascinating things.
Yes, and you know, that's something else. If you go to our website and see everything, we have a lot of our indexes online, so you can just go search. One of the things we did years ago was scan Cole's Notable Men. There's over 1,000 of those. And so those are available digitally, or we can print them. We kind of meet people wherever they are. If you want to use paper and pencil, we can do that. If you want everything digital, we can do that too. We did the World War II book several years ago. Oh, 20-some years ago.
Okay.
And we did all those interviews, and we have all those transcripts. If you're happy with just the book, that's fine. If you want to know a little bit more, It's in the folder.
Great.
You know, there's just...
Well, it's a great resource, and here we are celebrating the past with our bicentennial, but we also have talked about celebrating the present and some of the things that people just don't realize, the resources we have in the community. I know at the Dirksen Center, we talk often about the fact that the center has a national reputation, if not a global one, and people just don't realize that. Yes. And now the same thing with the Tazewell County Genealogical Society, you know, nationally known and a national resource. So it wouldn't be possible if not for dedicated volunteers, of which you are one of many. Yes. But I appreciate you coming in here today, sharing that story. I hope people will take advantage of the resource that's there. And again, thanks for being here.
Oh, well, thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. I want to thank those who make this effort possible, the Pekin Area Chamber of Commerce, our sound guy and recording expert, Mike Eaton, the Pekin Public Library for providing us a place to host and record, and to our many guests who add to the archives of What's the Story Pekin. Please be sure to share your thoughts by emailing us at pekinpodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to rate us on whatever platform you listen to, and stay tuned for more podcasts to come.